2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We've got another great show for you today. We're here to recap what was a very wild wild card weekend, and we're going to look ahead to the division series. To do that, I am joined by my friend and co-worker, Jeff Ponce. Jeff, I want to start with, before we dive into any of the series and look ahead to the division series, when Major League Baseball first announced they were expanding the postseason and including this wild card round, six teams in each league, three-game wild card series, I was a little concerned it was going to water down the postseason, just the level of competition, and almost make it, a little bit of a participation trophy to get into the playoffs, make it too easy, and the caliber of play we would see just wouldn't be up to what we were expecting in October. Having gone through our first year of the wild card series as it is formatted currently, I have to say I was wrong. This was an exciting, exciting weekend of baseball. Friday and Saturday saw some great pitching performances all the way around. Absolutely playoff caliber aces going at it. And then game three Sunday, Padres-Mets was a classic in a couple different ways. Maybe not in the score, but a great game nonetheless. I have to say, I came into this a little skeptical of the wild card series and this postseason expansion. But after watching it play out in real time, I'm in.
Yeah, I would have to agree, Kyle. Having sat here and, watched really two full days of baseball and then one game tonight, it seems like, even the series that were sweeps, a lot of the time they were tight games. The Philly Cardinals games were tight. They were exciting until the last out. There was a possibility, those games could be tied up. The Rays and the Guardians, obviously, they pretty much played three games, more or less, right? Really tight games. I would say that, the Mariners and the Blue Jays, first game, maybe not so much. Second game, come on. I mean, they come back from, a 7-run deficit. I don't think we've seen that before in the history of the game, if I'm not mistaken. I'll double check on that one. And then, the Padres-Mets series was great. And there were a ton of battles there that went three, and a lot of excitement, a lot of passion. And, we got our deciding one game, winner takes all, and it went to San Diego. So really exciting series overall. I think the quality of the teams in the playoffs overall was really good. Just kind of answering the watered down product thing. I think everybody was sort of concerned about that, right? We look at the NBA playoffs and some of these leagues, and it's like there's teams that kind of are on the bubble that make it, and you're like, all right, these guys are going to get washed in round one, and that often happens. Well, I didn't think that was the case. Even with the sweeps, I thought it was sort of the nature of the shorter series that a lot of these, if they were seven-game series, best of seven, it wouldn't have shocked me if these games, series went five or six games and that, or even seven. So, yeah, I thought overall really good matchups, really good teams. And we haven't even seen the best teams in the playoffs yet based on, the actual production during the regular season. That's really exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing the Astros, how they sort of deploy this incredibly deep arsenal of weapons. They have seven starters, more or less, if you count Hunter Brown. Could be really interesting with the way starters sometimes get deployed in relief roles, long relief roles in the playoffs and some of these tight games. That could be a deciding factor. I think the Dodgers, of course, you can never count them out. The Yankees, we've got a little bit of drama with the Yankees now with Aroldis Chapman being dismissed, not being on the playoff roster, go right through. So I'm really excited to dive into it. Let's talk about these games and then, a little bit about the games that are going to be upcoming on Tuesday and the rest of the week.
Yeah, I mean, we have to start with the Mets-Padres series, the only series to go three games. And Jeff, for all of our listeners out there, I want you to pull out your phone and read the text message that I sent you at the end of the second inning.
I think I remember what it was, but I don't want to paraphrase, so I'll just make sure that I get it correct. And it was, Musgrove has the look. He's got this. And that was 7:49, so we're talking like the second or third inning.
Yeah, I texted
you. I agree. I thought the body language between him and Bassett, it was noticeable, as you said. So
yeah, I mean, that was the thing that jumped out to me. I texted you. I texted some other friends. Watching Chris Bassett, obviously, he was really struggling with the pitch comm. And, you could see he was flustered. I mean, you could see it with his pitch execution. He was falling behind batters. The Padres were working a lot of at-bats against him. Whereas Musgrove, when he walked off the mound that second inning, I mean, you could tell. he had this. I mean, and that was just so, so, so clear. And it played out that way. I mean, it was something where just it was night and day, the body language between the two of them. And look, Joe Musgrove went out and pitched his tail off. And, you know, for anyone who's been paying attention, he's been doing this all year. He has a sub-3 ERA. He allowed one run in his final four starts of the regular season. This wasn't a surprise for anyone who's been paying attention. In terms of the substance check, here's what I'll say. I think it was interesting because I have a lot of family and friends on both sides, Mets fans and Padres fans. And the Mets fans were apoplectic that look at what's on his ear. He's totally cheating. This is ridiculous. You know, Twitter really set them off. And all the Padres fans were going, that's so Bush League of Showalter to, you know, check and yada, yada. Look, I get Buck Showalter. I'm sure that word filtered its way down from the Mets front office down to the dugout that, hey, there's pictures of him. It looks like something's on his ear. Go out and check it. And I get it from the Mets perspective and Buck Showalter's perspective. Hey, let's go out and check this. But here's the thing. If you're going to do that, you better make sure you're right. Because if you're not, you're just going to tick off the guy who's already taking it to you. And that's pretty much what happened. I mean, Joe Musgrove had the Mets number all night. He was getting to swing early in counts, getting ahead of hitters, you know, a lot of weak contact early. You know, toward the end, the Mets started squaring up some balls a little bit more, the final out in the sixth, a little bit more in the seventh. But I mean, Joe Musgrove had it all working. And again, you could see it as early as that second inning when he was walking off the mound. Nothing was going to faze him. He had this in the bag.
Yeah. And, you know, as for the whole substance thing, you could look at his ears and he wasn't going to his ear at all. He's going to his hat. He was going and kind of wipe off his fingers. Also the way the type of stuff that Musgrove throws and the fact that he pitches to contact quite a bit. It's kind of counterintuitive to the whole spin thing. He was throwing a little bit harder tonight. He was amped up. With velocity comes a increase in spin just sort of naturally. But I thought the reason I brought this up again is I wanted to sort of mention one tweet that came out from Andrew McCutchen, former All-Star.
Former
said,
MVP.
Here we go. I guarantee Musgrove is red hot in his ears. Pitcher uses it as a mechanism to stay locked in during games. Burns like crazy. And I don't know why some guys think it helps them, but it doesn't help in any way. It's not sticky, yada yada yada. And a couple other guys confirmed it. Brent Rooker was mentioning that guys at the end of the AAA season were using it just sort of to feel something. It's one of those things like smelling salts. I can remember like before, like, you know, varsity games, we'd rip some smelling salts, like run out of the field or whatever, football or you know hockey, kind of the same thing. I think it's just probably one of those things. He wasn't going to it. I didn't think it had an impact.
It didn't. And again, yeah. This is, you know, people barking on Twitter and trying to find excuses. People are upset looking for stuff. Joe Musgrove just had his number and people are going to spin rate. Yeah. It's called adrenaline. You're throwing harder. You're making your first career postseason start for your hometown team. The crowd's rocking. You want to silence them. I mean, adrenaline, velocity, more spin. This was just a great pitcher going out there and doing what he does best and give Joe Musgrove credit.
Yeah, and credit to Buck for checking him too. Like, it's all part of the game within the game. Like, that's the stuff we just got to, you know, I guess not being involved from a fan perspective, I can just sort of take a step back and just enjoy all the madness. But I understand why everything.
Part of the gamesmanship. Hey. There's nothing wrong. Again, Buck going out and checking, totally fine. But again, if you're going to take that step, you better make sure you're right. Because otherwise, you're just going to piss off the guy who's taking it to you. So, at the end of the day, though, the Padres, I think what was really impressive, especially, you know, game one, coming out and jumping on Max Scherzer for four homers and seven runs. You know, if you had told me, and I picked the Padres to win this series back on our wild card preview podcast. But to me, my thought was if they were going to win game one, it would have been, hey, Yu Darvish outdueling Max Scherzer, a 2-1 type of game. If you told me the Padres are going to hit four homers and four and a third innings off Max Scherzer, score seven runs off of him, I would have said that would have been a stretch, especially given the Padres' lack of power this year. But they went out and they did it. And what was cool with them this series, their offense, and really this team has not been a high-functioning, complete offense very often this year. This has been a very, very, very pitching-driven team. But it was really cool to see throughout the series, this was a team that was working counts. They were having great at-bats, 1-9, top to bottom in the lineup. They were hitting homers. They were singles, doubles, laying down sack bunts, stealing bases. They were doing everything. And people talk about postseason baseball and what wins. It's being complete. It's being 1-9. Everyone's a threat. You can hit for power. You can hit for average. You can do the big things. You can do the little things. If you're one-dimensional, you're not going to make it very far. And it was really cool to see the Padres kind of play that complete game over the course of the series. They hit for power. They did the little things. They did it all, and that's why they're moving on. And really, the big key for them this series was the bottom of the lineup, and specifically Trent Grisham, who, just to be frank, was in there this entire season solely for his defense. And he showcased that a little bit in the series too, but offensively, it was hard to watch a lot of the year. And he came out this series and just absolutely tore it up. But I mean, overall, the bottom of that lineup, the bottom three guys, you know, 4 for 11, 2 doubles, a homer in the first game, homer and 3 runs the second game. Tonight, 4 for 6, 4 runs, 3 RBIs. I say tonight, we're recording this Sunday night after the conclusion of game three. I mean, when you get that kind of production from the bottom of your lineup, you're in great shape. And give Trent Grisham and Ha-Sung Kim and Austin Nola credit. Again, you know, Joe Musgrove is the reason they won this game tonight, but you need runs and support. And everyone chipped in a little bit. Again, Juan Soto laying down that sack bunt, that was great. But for the bottom of the order to do what it did this entire series, and especially in the clincher, it was impressive. And I talked about Ha-Sung Kim and been hitting really well since July, but I can't sit here and tell you I thought Trent Grisham would hit 2 bombs and really be the best offensive player of the series on either team. I would not have predicted that.
You got to love baseball for that reason. But yeah, and I think, you know, Soto seemed like he kind of got his swagger back a little bit too, which I think that's a little scary. Like, that was the thing I was going to add in here on the Padres. And you had mentioned this actually in our playoffs preview podcast late last week. And you talked a little bit about Myers and some of these other guys that were kind of getting going and might be a little bit sneaky. And it's funny, I don't even think we talked about, like, if Soto got hot and got hot the way Soto can get hot. Oh man, he's such a difference maker. And I think especially when you have Machado and then Bell behind him and their ability to change a game in one swing. I mean, we saw Bell, you know, with that. I've never seen a ball that was as muscled as much as that ball was muscled. The other day, weird angle, tough pitch to hit against a tough pitcher, and just absolutely muscled like 425 feet. You know, and then you have all these guys that just do a lot of little things well, whether it's Cronenworth, even Austin Nola at the bottom of the lineup isn't a bad hitter. Profar, these are veteran players with a variety of skills that can fill a bunch of different roles if they're pitching well, if they're defending well, and their hits are dropping. This is a really dangerous team.
Again, the Padres won the series. The Mets were a good team. They won 101 games. They, you know, hit the skids a little bit at the end there, but the Padres just went out and beat them and give the Padres credit. And again, I talked about this. I picked this to happen because I knew the strength of this starting rotation. I can't say, like I said, that I would have predicted the bottom of the order to come through like it did, but Padres are certainly happy that it did. And now they're heading on to the NLDS against the Dodgers. Jeff, I want to go through some of these other series real quick. Cardinals-Phillies, you picked the Cardinals to win the World Series, and they were swept in the wild card round. I did tease you a little bit here. I went back and listened just to double check. I went 3 for 4 on my wild card round picks. You went 0 for 4, my friend. You took
it. Yes, 0 for.
Bro, 0 for 4 on all four series. But with the Cardinals, you know, I obviously game one, the way that ended was certainly shocking just because you don't expect that from the Cardinals, you know, especially defensively. You know, Tommy Edman, that play is tough because they're playing infield in that situation, 2-1 ball game, bases loaded. But Nolan Arenado, that chopper especially, I mean, he gets that 999 times out of 1,000, and that was the one time it got through.
Yeah,
it was certainly weird to see. And obviously, look, when you have your standout closer come in and walks and hit batters, and clearly he doesn't have it. I mean, it's a combination of walking guys combined with some shoddy defense. That's how big innings like that happen, especially in the playoffs. But I also do want to mention, you know, the Cardinals scored 3 runs in 2 games, and they didn't score until the 7th inning in game one, got shut out in game two. And this is one of the things I mentioned on the podcast before. This offense would disappear at times, especially when Paul Goldschmidt wasn't going well. And we saw that. This was just, and again, first of all, give Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola credit. These are two of the best starters in baseball. They went out, they did their job. The Phillies bullpen, which has been a big issue for them for years, but they have some good arms they brought in this year. A couple guys, Sir Anthony Dominguez coming back is a big one. You know, the Phillies pitched well, give them credit, but this is where, again, the Cardinals, this was kind of their weak point. Their offense would disappear for stretches, and 3 runs in 2 games isn't going to get the job done unless you're the Guardians.
Yeah. Unless you're the Guardians. Absolutely. You know, and I think the big thing is they lived and died a little bit with Goldschmidt and Arenado. I thought where they would win this series when I picked them, you know, ultimately was, you know, with the bullpens. You know, once they got past those starters, Philly's bullpen has been explosive and not necessarily in a good way. And, you know, they're a veteran club that grinds out at bats and really makes pitchers work. And I just thought that, you know, they would sort of grind out late in games. We kind of saw it yesterday. I mean, they had guys on multiple innings in a row. They had the sort of the go-ahead run come to the plate, and they weren't able to materialize or do anything with it. Really, really bad at bat from Paul Goldschmidt in the eighth. And then, you know, Arenado sort of followed it up with another strikeout. So it was rough just offensively. And, you know, the Blue Jays versus the Mariners, I would honestly say that's the one that I'm most surprised by. I really thought the Blue Jays were going to roll.
So here's why I picked the Mariners. You talked about the Cardinals' devil magic. I'm believing the Mariners' magic this year. I mean, in the regular season this year, they had 37 comeback wins. They won 23 games in their last at-bat, 12 of them via walk-off. I mean, this is a team that just continuously, again and again and again, found ways to win games they had no business winning. And that came true in game two. And again, it goes back to, you know, Carlos Santana hit a big home run to get them back in it. But the way they ended up tying this thing, singles, doubles, good at-bats, string together, hit after hit after hit. And even, you know, J.P. Crawford in the scorebook, obviously, it's a bases-clearing double. You know, it's a pop-up and, you know, falls in. Obviously, the collision between Bo Bichette and George Springer was scary. You hope everyone's okay. But again, put the ball in play. Give yourself a chance. Good things are going to happen, especially in the postseason, especially against this caliber of pitching. You know, if you're going up there swinging from your shoes every time out, you're not going to have any success. You've got to battle. You've got to fight. You got to grind. And the Mariners have shown the ability to do that. It was a remarkable comeback and one of the most memorable postseason games of my lifetime. And I think just, you know, it was kind of funny when they were down 8-1, I remember kind of having the thoughts like, you know, if there's one team I'm not going to say is totally out of this, it's probably them. And it came true. Again, I picked them to win this round. I can't say I thought they would have a comeback quite like that, down 8-1 in the fifth and you win 10-9. But this is what this team can do. And it's what kind of makes this year so fun and special for them.
Yeah. I also picked teams that I picked before the season, which were the Jays and the Rays. So, the Rays and the Mets. So I picked both of those. Picked the Cardinals because I cover them. Jays because I cover them. So I got too personal. I'm going for blood this round.
Yeah. Well, and I think we do have to wrap up with the Guardians here. Speaking of great games, that 15 inning thriller game too. I mentioned, you know, scoring 3 runs in 2 games won't win you a whole lot in the postseason. Guardians, it's enough. They pitched 24 innings and allowed 1 run. That's a remarkable. And again, we knew this was a great pitching staff. If you told me, oh yeah, they're going to shut anyone down, especially a Rays offense that, as I've been trying to tell everyone, is not that good. They match up well. That works better against inferior pitching. When you're facing a team like the Guardians, you need impact hitters. They just didn't have it. But still, that was a remarkable performance. And Oscar Gonzalez, you know, it's funny. During our wild card preview podcast, I had so many different thoughts rolling around in my head. I talked too fast and made 2 mistakes. First, I mentioned Bradley Zimmer was DFA'd. He was actually traded, and so I want to issue that correction. But also in talking about how moving Zimmer, eventually DFAing Bradley, kind of helped out the lineup. You bring up Kwan, allows you to put Naylor more first base. You know, Owen Miller didn't have the best year, but I stand by it. He can hit, and he was an upgrade of what they had, taking the roster spot. Oscar Gonzalez came up midseason. There was an opening for him in the outfield, in part because of some of the decisions they made with their roster. And he was great all year, putting together our all-rookie team. You know, this was a historically good year for rookie outfielders. You had Julio Rodriguez, Michael Harris, and Stephen Kwan, all three of whom were lights out in different ways. In a weaker year, Oscar Gonzalez would have made our all-rookie team. He was really, really good. And it was funny. I was actually sitting with a Guardians fan as that game was unfolding in extra innings, and Gonzalez came up. And the guy I was sitting with, who's a diehard Guardians fan, watches everything. He's like, he's gonna end it right here. He's going to hit a walk-off to end it. And he was right. He was just a few innings early. It's just one of those things where another guy brought him up midseason, making an impact. And again, Guardians, once again, you talked about, they have a lot of depth in that organization. They make smart choices about who to put on the roster and who not to, and paid off for them in a big way, pretty dramatic fashion to end a classic.
And I think you had mentioned this in the preview podcast, but there's sort of this classical build for playoff baseball as well, in terms of they execute the fundamentals very well, defensively, you know, offensively, in terms of putting the ball in play, there were a lot of strikeouts in that game, but typically they're not a high strikeout team. They can run the bases a little bit. So, you know, they're dangerous in those situational sort of aspects of the game that I think, you know, in this series are ultimately what separated them from Tampa, who's also, you know, a fairly good defensive team. But I just think when you look at this roster, right, you go through like Kwan, Rosario, Ramirez, Naylor, you know, Gonzalez, as you mentioned, Jimenez, Brennan, Hedges, Straw. These aren't anybody that they signed as a free agent. A lot of these guys are either homegrown players or guys that they acquired. You know, Hedges was a little bit more, I would say, kind of a giveaway, sure. But, you know, younger players, guys that hadn't necessarily fully established themselves. Rosario is probably the only one that has, you know, prior to coming here. And then you look at the bullpen and some of the names, you got Rule 5 picks like Trevor Steven out of the Yankees organization, you know, Class A they acquired. Sandlin was a draft pick years ago. Eli Morgan came from, you know,
Gonzaga. He was a draft pick, but yeah. And Sam Hedges.
Daniel De La Santos, like, he's been on what, three or four organizations at this point, and he pitched a huge inning for them. And then Sam Hedges is another, you know, internally developed guy. He comes out and pitches three great innings, you know, allowed three hits, but didn't walk anybody, struck out six, and, you know, ultimately ends up getting the win.
Yeah, Sam Hentges and Nick Sandlin have been two really underrated relievers for the Guardians. You know, James Karinchak and Emmanuel Clase get a lot of the love, as they should, but those two have been great. And yeah, Daniel De Los Santos, I wrote him up as a Mariners prospect. I wrote him up as a Padres prospect and bounced around the Philly, Pittsburgh for a minute.
Perfect game or a no-hitter with the Padres, right? Maybe 18 in that system early in the year. I can remember writing him up when he threw either a no-hitter or a perfect game. And then I saw him when he had a decent year with Lehigh Valley when he was with Philly.
Yeah, I saw him eventually Lehigh Valley, and yeah, I saw him like Elsinore. So, but no, it's again the Guardians, surprise, surprise, have a lot of really good arms and they're moving on. All right, Jeff. So we've recapped the wild card round. We're going to look ahead to the division series. First, we're going to take a quick break.
Every deep playoff run starts with building an amazing team. Doing the same for your business doesn't take a room full of scouts. You just need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Hate waiting? Indeed U.S. data shows over 80% of Indeed employees find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. The right candidate is doing everything they can to find you. And if you use Indeed, you can be sure you're doing everything you can to find them too. When I've used Indeed at Baseball America, I've loved the way they've taken the hassle out of the hiring process. Indeed has saved me headaches. I can interview virtually with no downloads, plugins, or purchases. Do it all in one place with Indeed. After using Indeed's virtual interviews, employers like me have said that it saved them days of hiring time, according to Indeed data in the U.S. One of the other things I loved is it kept track of things for me when I'm trying to figure out when am I taking this interview, who am I going to interview today. So join over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed knows when you're growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why when you sponsor a job, you only pay for quality applications from resumes in our database matching your job description. Visit Indeed.com/Baseball America to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, we are back. I'm Kyle Glazer here with Jeff Ponce, breaking down the 2022 postseason. We just recapped the wild card round before the break. Now we're going to look ahead to the division series. Jeff, the division series, one kind of fun wrinkle with this now, I mean, it would happen occasionally with, you know, the one game wild card that was introduced a few years back, but nothing quite like this. Three of the four division series we've got this year are all intra-division. Got Astros, Mariners, Dodgers, Padres, Braves, Phillies. Teams that are all very, very, very familiar with each other. You've got the Yankees and Guardians, who have met in the postseason a lot over the years. All of these matchups are really intriguing. And I think even the one that when I would look at on the outside and say, that's probably the one I would say, you know, more heavily slanted in one direction than the other, is the one that was actually the closest among the interdivision series this year, and that was the Braves and the Phillies. To starting with you, which of these four matchups intrigues you the most? Because there's a lot of storylines all over the place here.
Sure. You know, frankly, I think it's the Padres and the Dodgers. When teams are sort of trying to get over this hump and get to the next level, as the Padres have for a long time, and, you know, sort of get to those championship aspirations, there's always a team in the way initially that they have to get over. The Bulls with Jordan, it was the Pistons in Detroit, right? And you go right through. I think, you know, certainly LeBron had those with like the Celtics and some of those teams. So we see it here between these two, and like if they can get over that hump, I think that would be huge. What a massive victory that could then sort of propel them through the NLCS and potentially into the World Series. But when you look at this team's pitching staff, as we said, how they're put together, the Dodgers are a little bit beat up. They're still the Dodgers, though. I wonder if this could be a turning point. Now, maybe it isn't. The Dodgers just do what the Dodgers do and they roll. But to me, this is the most intriguing series because this could be a bit of a shift in balance, or just the Padres finally kind of winning one against the Dodgers.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, I was a former Padres beat writer, and you know, being out here for us, I've written about the Padres and Dodgers a lot over the years. Really, since 2011, this has not been a rivalry. It's been an annual shellacking. Dodgers just taking it to the Padres year in and year out, and there's been so many times where it's like, oh man, the Padres, they might finally be turning the corner. They're finally playing the Dodgers tough, and then inevitably the Dodgers would roll, and you look up and the season series would be 14-5 as it was this year, or 13-6 or something in that vein. You know, it's going to be interesting because, as you mentioned, the Dodgers right now, there's some uncertainty about who their fourth starter is going to be. Tony Gonsolin is limited to 4 innings. You're going to stack 3 lefties to start games 1, 2, and 3. Padres, some of their right-handed hitters are their strength. So there's certainly some favorable matchups there. One of the things that'll be interesting to me to see is because, I mean, you can get through it with 3 starters and you feel pretty good about the Padres' top 3 starters. But given they already had to go through a wild card round, the way the schedule kind of lines up, if you have a healthy and effective Mike Clevinger as an option to start one of the games, just depending on how the series plays out, that could be an advantage. Because if the Padres have a healthy, effective Mike Clevinger over whatever the Dodgers are going to have to cobble together, if they need to use a fourth starter, that changes the dynamic. But again, a short series, 5 games, I don't know if it's going to get to that point. It's really going to come down to luck. There's certainly a talent difference here. That's been made very, very clear year after year. The Dodgers are just a deeper, more talented team, more balanced team. There's also a bit of a mental block. The Dodgers have owned the West for years and years and years. The Giants won the West last year, but the Dodgers beat them in the postseason, and we're still clearly kind of the class of the division in a lot of ways. We'll see. It's going to be a great series. I know I'm excited. I'll be covering each of those games for us here at BA. I'll be at Dodger Stadium Tuesday, Wednesday, Petco Park Friday, and then whatever happens after that. Certainly going to be a really, really intriguing series. The one I'm kind of looking at is the Astros-Mariners, and here's why. So the Astros won the season series 12-7. The run differential wasn't that great. It was, you know, 73-65. So, I mean, the games were somewhat close. But here's the other kicker. The Astros-Mariners haven't played since July 31st. They played all 19 of their games in the first half of the season, more or less. MLB, the way they scheduled that was very, very weird. The Astros-Mariners haven't played. The Mariners had acquired Luis Castillo when they played the last game or two, but the Astros have never faced the Mariners with Luis Castillo in their rotation. So for me, it's going to be just a little bit of a different dynamic. The Mariners are a pretty different team than they were when the Astros were beating them up most of the year. Again, I picked the Astros to win the World Series, and I'm still going to stick with that, but I just think it's going to be an interesting dynamic. This is a very different Mariners team than the last time these two teams faced.
Yeah, you know, I think so too. Like, I actually didn't realize that they hadn't played in that long. But, you know, any of these division series, you have some familiarity. You add in the fact that, you know, the Mariners can roll out, you know, a pretty formidable group of starters at the beginning of the series still. And they're mixing in guys like Kirby, you know, and into the bullpen. Brash, they have a lot of different looks. They might be able to sneak up on them. It's just, I have such a difficult time betting against the Astros, you know, especially leading up to the World Series. When they're playing some of these super teams, different story. But I don't know. It's just, it's so hard. It could go to the distance, but I do think ultimately the Astros prevail. But it wouldn't shock me if, you know, the Mariners do take them, you know, the full series.
Yeah. Again, when you have this much familiarity, a lot of things can happen. As much as we talk about all the different possibilities, if you ask me to make my picks, I would pick the Braves to beat the Phillies, the Astros to beat the Mariners, and the Dodgers to beat the Padres in this division series. The one series that I'm looking at, and I talked about it during our postseason preview podcast before the wild card round, the Yankees took it to the Guardians during the year. The Yankees won 5 of 6 games. They crushed them on the run differential. But I got to tell you, I like this matchup for the Guardians. I like the pitching staff. I like the way they play. We've talked about they're built very, very well for the postseason. You know, the Yankees finished the season strong, and a lot of that was Aaron Judge driving them. But there's still some questions with this team. How consistent is this offense going to be? How reliant is this offense going to be on really one guy to carry them? Because as I wrote, even as they finished the year hot, it was Aaron Judge on a different level, and everyone else in that lineup is very, very average at best in terms of when you took the total sum of it all. They're dealing with some injuries. I got to say, if I'm going to pick one upset, this is the one I'm picking. It would be the Guardians to beat the Yankees.
I think I agree with you. I think the other thing, too, is if I remember correctly, at least one of the series between the Guardians and the Yankees in the Bronx was in April, like maybe the second week of the season, because that's when Stephen Kwan and was it Straw or somebody got into it in the outfield with some Yankees fans. If you remember, they were throwing stuff at him and he climbed up the wall and it became a little bit of a snafu there. So I don't know, maybe they got some bulletin board material, right? They can dig back into the box there. And if it's a team that they haven't seen in a long time, we've seen how they've come together. We'll see, you know, it's just, that's a really good bullpen. They can go toe to toe with the Yankees with their bullpen. And the Yankees just seem like a team that could come out potentially really cold after having not played for a week. I still think that could be a factor. I'm interested to see how that factors into all this. If the bye is indeed a benefit, or if it's a deterrent on the innings, or maybe it's a little both. Maybe it's good for the pitching. Maybe it's bad for the hitting. I just want to see how long it takes some of these teams to get going. Maybe some teams come out hot out of the box, but it will be interesting to watch.
Yeah, the last time these two teams faced, you're right, there was that series in April, and then they played another series at the beginning of July. So last time these two teams played was July 3rd. So again, both these teams, they're very different now. A lot of things have happened. You have injuries, you have roster moves, you have players taking steps forward in the second half. So it's been a while, but I do look at the matchup. I do look at the way these teams are kind of coming into it. I do think there is a good chance the Guardians win this series. Again, if I'm going to pick an upset, is it this one? Yes. Am I going to pick it to happen? Yeah. Fortune favors the bold. Let's do it. Guardians in 5.
Oh, man. I'm not going to be too much of a homer. I'm going to pick the Yankees just because I don't want to be the Boston guy that automatically picks. Like, the Yankees. We have to have some variance here because otherwise all of our picks would be exactly the same, because I'm not picking against the Braves again. I made that mistake of trying to write them off too early this season and I look silly. So not going to bet against them. Like I said, I just can't bet against the Astros. Not that we're actually betting. Are you going Dodgers over Padres?
I am, yeah.
I think ultimately I probably would.
I
want to see the Padres win just because it'd be as close as the we've had of the Red Sox in 2004 finally getting over the hump with the Yankees. Not quite as long, but still, you know, I think like there's a little bit of little brother syndrome, and as somebody you know, who grew up cheering for the Red Sox, I can understand that a little bit, you know, put myself in their shoes. I have some sympathy for the Padres fans, but still picking the Dodgers.
Yeah, again, I think I see a scenario where the Padres win this series. I do. I just am hesitant to pick it. Yeah. I've covered these two teams for too long and seen too much to pick against the Dodgers in this scenario. The Braves-Phillies series is interesting to me just because, again, we talk about intra-division rivalries. And the Braves won the season series 11-8. They outscored them 88-85. It was close. I mean, a 3-run difference. The Phillies have played the Braves pretty tough. So, again, I'm not going to pick against the Braves. This team is too good. They've been too good. They've been the best team in baseball since June 1st. They have the best record of baseball since June 1st. Not the Astros, not the Yankees, not the Dodgers, the Braves. And I think picking against them as the defending World Series champions, playing as well as they are, would be foolish. But I think the Phillies have an opportunity to play this one a little closer than maybe people are giving them credit for. And again, some of that is the Phillies have made a habit of making things more difficult than it should be on themselves at times. But they're here. They beat a good Cardinals team. And they have two really good guys that can throw out games one and two that are going to be fully rested, just the way they, you know, ended things pretty early. You can go back to Nola and Wheeler early in the series, and I think any time those two guys are on the mound, you have a really good chance to win. All right, so it sounds like we're the same, except I'm going Guardians, you're going Yankees. I am looking forward to it. Jeff, what's the number one thing you're going to be looking for here in the division series before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think if I had to hone in on one thing, I really think it is Juan Soto. You know, can Soto sort of bring that swagger and sort of that looseness to the Padres that they need and sort of be the difference maker? If he gets hot here, once again, this is a guy that, you know, every time he comes up, just his presence alone and, you know, how grating he can be to sort of watch, as I'm sure an opposing player and certainly an opposing fan, I'm sure, when he's, you know, doing his whole theatrics and everything else in the box, he's hitting for power, moving guys along. That's a different lineup, you know, and we know how good Soto can be, and we haven't really truly seen it. So I wonder if you can get that swagger, get all that going. That's really what I'm going to be watching for. Want to see great players be great in big moments.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be looking to see if Spencer Strider is back for the Braves. There's optimism, but it's not official yet. If he's in the rotation for the Braves, it just makes them that much better. And I think that's going to be something where, you know, the Braves are a really, really good team that has every bit the chance to defend their World Series title. But if he's back, if he's healthy, if he's dealing like he's capable of, it's just going to make him that much better. So that's what I'll be looking for. You're going with the vet. I'm going with the rookie.
There we go.
All right, everyone, that'll do it for another Baseball America podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Jeff Ponce, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the division series.